Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick. Mitch Hotch with you this morning. Hope everyone had a nice, relaxing weekend. We got a lot of news this morning. There's the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference. We're going to talk about the weakness in tech, particularly Facebook and Twitter. They had eventful weekends. NIO had an eventful weekend with NIO Day. We're going to talk about Bitcoin. I mentioned healthcare, so a lot to get to on our show today. Hit that like button. I want to also mention that today's show is sponsored by Market Structure Edge. Market Structure Edge is the first decision support platform for traders built on Market Structure. Try the new way to trade for free at marketstructureedge.com. And then we'll be joined at 8:35 by our guest, who is the founder of Market Structure Edge, Tim Quast. So a lot to get to, Joel. To bring up those charts, tell us how we're doing this morning.
S&Ps are in the red this morning by 24 and three quarters handles. It's called 24 and a half at 37.93. Crude, it's going the same way. That's down 39 cents at 51.85. Gold, getting a little green here on gold, up 470 after a rough week. That's at 18.40. Silver, it's going the same way as well. That's up 22 cents at 24.86. And some red for Bitcoin futures today. They're down $5,020 at 34,500. So cryptocurrency giving a little bit back over the weekend.
And you know what? You look at this and you see all weekend them talking about the Bitcoin pullback. Some people calling it a Bitcoin crash. I mean, put it into perspective. It's getting back to where it was 4 days ago. But I was thinking all weekend, I'm like, they're probably going to hit the S&P futures on this too because it spooks everyone. There's a lot of people, a lot of money who's went into Bitcoin. It's a risk asset. You know, it's seen as, you know, obviously risk on, risk off. And I'm like, that's been leading all weekend. So I saw so many headlines about the Bitcoin crash. I'm like, well, that's got to spook futures. So futures open, and they actually didn't open, S&P futures didn't open down very much. Basically flat, and then they just kept leaking them and leaking them and leaking them. So, you know, we can blame COVID, but I am actually going to blame Bitcoin for the S&P futures here this morning. So, for once and probably ever, I think Bitcoin led this sell-off.
Not the fact that there are concerns we've had an everything rally.
Well, that's it. That's why Bitcoin can't. Like, I'm not saying Bitcoin is going to be your new leader. I'm just saying Bitcoin can, because the everything rally, everything has been rallying together. And you have the first thing that the thing that doesn't close starts to sell off significantly. It's going to spook people who are long other assets. And they're going to say, okay, maybe time to lock up. So it is. I believe the reason for the sell-off this morning is Bitcoin. I don't think that's going to be like, oh, we're going to become Bitcoin and it's going to be the indicator for the whole market. But you're exactly right. Because we've had an everything rally, the one thing that's open all weekend sells off significantly, spooks you in other asset classes and spooks you in the stocks. So I was spooked. I was thinking the same thing, that, oh, I bet you we're going to have an ugly Monday with Bitcoin selling off that much. And sure enough, we do. So, I mean, you get media will say COVID, media will say Trump, media will say whatever they want to say. But Bitcoin's leading this charge down here this morning. So what do you do? Question. What do you do?
Question.
Buy the dip? Because it always works. Seems to always work. Do you buy the dip?
It's working a little bit in Bitcoin already. Not a ton, but a little bit. I mean, we're all
depends when you were buying the dip.
That's true.
You're buying the first dip. So, you know, we were down as much as 20% here. So we were off the lows. But, I mean, let's go to the Mara. Let's go to the Riot. You know, you look at these things and they're getting hammered. But let's put it in perspective. These stocks have had just incredible runs, too. I mean, Mara could lose 10 bucks and still be in an uptrend. So it's hard to just all of a sudden say the story is over here because it's had one bad day. I'm still long Bitcoin via the QBTC in Canada. I'm sticking with it. Like I said, I sold half, playing completely with the house's money, which I'm going to continue to do. I'm not a Bitcoin trader, so I don't intend to trade it. I just intend to hodl it. Joel, are you going to hodl any Bitcoins?
No, no. I'll wait for that pullback to 20,000.
Are you going to buy it at 20,000 if you get there?
Yep.
Yep. See, there's underneath the – Joel didn't even hesitate. He's a buy the dipper on Bitcoin too. The numbers on the screen. The one concern I had was they lost power. Where did they lose the big power outage? Where was that? Overseas, of some country, or the whole country lost power for a few hours. I don't know. It was like Europe, somewhere in Europe, I thought I saw. But anyway, somebody tweets out, hey, how's your Bitcoin doing? I'm like, oh man, if you lost the power grid, that Bitcoin would be in trouble. So anyways, that made me laugh. But anyway, so, let's go on to the movers of the day. Today it's Eli Lilly. It's the J.P. Morgan Health Conference, but it's Eli Lilly to start it all off because they're up 24 points. Alzheimer's drug shows some positivity. Spencer, give it to us.
That's all you need. It's phase two data, so they're not, you know, they're not at the beginning, but they're not at the end. They're midway through this process. So positive phase two data for their Alzheimer's drug, like you said, Dennis. They had another headline too about the FDA accepting their drug for heart failure, but the Alzheimer's drug that I don't want to try to pronounce. Screw it, I'll pronounce it. It's donanemab, and that's your leader this morning. Yeah, that's your catalyst this morning for LLY.
Wow. So we know when you get an Alzheimer's headline, you're going to see huge moves in stocks. And Eli Lilly is a huge company. You can say, oh, well, this is way overdone. But, you know, Biogen, when they were getting close, was popping up 30, 50%. I mean, these are huge companies, but this is just, you know, if anybody can ever get an Alzheimer's drug through, it's going to be, you know, huge for the company. So, not surprisingly, Lilly's up significantly here this morning. You're also seeing a sympathy rally in Biogen this morning, too. It's up 7. Obviously, they've got the drug that doesn't look like it's going to get approved, but still has a chance. So, Lilly, though, Joel, up $24.
Wow.
It's a huge company. It's a huge move. It's a new all-time high. I wish I would have held my Eli Lilly from, like, $24 when I bought it, like, 10 years ago, but I did not. I sold it at $85 when I thought it was overdone. It's $190 now, so that was definitely a mistake. Buy and hold wins again. Should hodl those stocks, too. Don't just hodl that Bitcoin. Hodl those stocks.
Boy, I think this is the biggest move I've ever seen in Lilly, at least to the upside.
It's a big move.
Yeah, one of the biggest. You got the 202, believe it or not, over that $200 barrier. And what's interesting about the chart right now is that you're finding some support here. I mean, you did pull off, but I mean, and I know these are just 15-minute and, you know, hour brackets, but hey, it's showing you here that someone's willing to buy this stock at 188. Wouldn't it be me, but someone is. So there's your early parameters, 188 and 202. You came down off that 202 a few times. I don't know where there's stuff in the book in this thing. You're blowing through. We've traded a lot of levels, you know, a lot of volume. So where this thing opens, I don't even think I could speculate, Dennis.
Well, 200, you start thinking, when you start making new all-time highs, and this is a good lesson because we have a lot of stocks making new all-time highs. The only thing you can really do if you don't want to look at levels is you can go to the optionality and you say, where is there open interest? Is there any strikes that have significant interest in stock like Lilly? There's probably not going to be that much that stands out, because I don't think anybody really had this on the radar here that, oh yeah, in February we're going to get some in January we're going to get Alzheimer's, you know, data here. But if you do go look at the options, I'll just do it for fun, you know, look at the monthlies, look out, is there anything that's really standing out with big open interest, because those can be stopping points. I mean, the 170 is out of play. There's 10,000 contracts there for this week, but obviously you can open significantly over that, so you can forget about that. But is there anything at 200? I mean, there's 2,500 contracts. So it's something, but it's not significant. If you go further out, I mean, there's nothing in January on the 22nd. If you go further out, go out to Feb. I'm just flying through the calls. There's just not much. There's not much. Somebody had a 723 at 195. 257, a 200. So there was some positioning out to February. But again, these aren't like 50,000 contracts, you know, 25,000 or 257 contracts. It's 25,000 shares. It can chew through that like nothing. So I don't really see much. But, you know, you just think big numbers, $200, psychological, and that's not surprising where it turned here this morning. Got just kissed up over 200 and then couldn't reclaim it. So if you think this is just going to rip higher here, it's got to get back up over 200. That's going to be your line in the sand for me. I don't like fading stocks making new all-time highs. So I tried that. I tried that on Friday. Tesla. I was like, I had this feeling, and maybe we should talk Tesla here for a second.
Because sure.
I just had this feeling, and not really, it wasn't even a feeling. I had, you know, I'm a relationship trader. You know, my basis isn't really charts. It's more relationships. So I looked, and, you know, I'm looking at Amazon selling off significantly in the first 20 minutes, and I'm looking at a lot of tech stocks selling off significantly in the first 10-20 minutes of Friday's trade. You can see the big sell-off in Amazon from 3,200 down to 3,150. And I'm like, you know what? If the tech's all going to start puking, they'll start puking Tesla too. But where I made my mistake was, I've been telling you guys that Tesla is the leader. Tesla has been the leader. And you know what? Tesla led, because Tesla was not selling off much. I was anticipating a Tesla sell-off because we had other big techs selling off. But because Tesla was not selling off, they ended up buying the dip on the Amazon. They ended up buying the dip on Apple. So you had this, you know, separation, this gap forming early Friday morning trade. I thought Tesla was going to come down to try to fill the gap here, talking the gap between all the other tech stocks, and Tesla wasn't selling off. And it wasn't the case. Tesla didn't sell off, and then the other stocks started to come back in. So, I mean, so use Tesla as your leader. I should have played it the other way. I've been buying the dip. And again, buy the dip just always seems to work. So I should have just did that for obvious reasons. But if you're buying the dip in Amazon and Apple, you were rewarded. Now, obviously, a lot of those gains are going away here this morning because a little bit of sell-off. But, I mean, and now, you know, coincidentally, you do get a Tesla sell-off to a certain extent. But you can put on any trade. Like I always say, I took a lot of heat for that. Why would you short Tesla? You're going to lose all your money. I mean, okay, one thing, stops are your friend. So when you put on something, so the way I set up this Tesla trade, it had traded up to 876. That was where it traded up to. And then it had come down like 865. I thought the puke was going to continue. It did not. So I put my stop where you said put it, Joel, too. You're like, give yourself to a new high. So I did it at 876, and it got there about 25 minutes later, and then it obviously went up to, where did we get up to, like 884 or something like that?
You actually said...
I was going to put it lower than that, yeah. But I brought it up, so you lost me a little more money.
I did, yeah. So don't pat me on the back.
Yeah,
I
was going to do 870, because I was looking for immediate follow-through, immediate gratification. Yeah. I was like, I'll give it a little bit of room. So I ended up losing, I think, 12 points on it, which is like, whoa, you lost 12 points on something. It's 1%, so yeah, I didn't lose a ton of money.
Yeah, and also, like, if you're going to, you know, if you are going to try something like that in Tesla and you think you're going to do it with, like, a 10-point stop or something, you know.
It's almost too tight yet.
Yeah, I mean, $800, $900 stock, yeah. But it was a valiant effort.
It's almost too tight. A 10-point stop is almost too tight on the thing, because it's just chopping around and you're going to get stopped out. I mean, just shorting stocks making all-time highs, breaking all kinds of rules. Odds of you making money on that trade are probably pretty slim, despite, you know, what I was looking at was the relationships. And I make a lot of money trading those relationships, don't kid yourself. You see leaders start to fall, other stocks start to fall as well. Even Bitcoin, saying that Bitcoin was the leader. If you were short in S&P futures at the open, on Sunday night open, you're making some money here right now just saying, hey, this might be a risk-off day because a lot of people getting spanked in Bitcoin. And if they're in other things, they might be spooked. So it's just all these stocks have relationships. They tend to follow each other. And even Bitcoin, I know they say, oh, it's nothing to do. And you get pump on CNBC saying there's zero correlation between that and the markets. Not in the last 6 months. Maybe in the last 6 years, but not in the last 6 months. Bitcoin has been very much correlated with the markets. We had the big sell-off in March. Bitcoin gets banked. You had the big, you know, rally here and the everything rally. Bitcoin's right along participating in it. Obviously, it's participating at a much higher percentage level. It's much more volatile than the overall market. But to say there's no relationship, at least in the last few months, is wrong. Over the last 6 years, sure, maybe the data shows that because you have 5.5 years skewing it the other way. But I can tell you right now, Bitcoin is trading as a risk asset. At least right now.
It's a $34,000, $400 risk asset.
It is.
Right? And, you know. Yep.
So you're buying a $20,000. Spencer, are you going to get in this Bitcoin at all?
I bought some.
Oh, you bought it when I did.
Yeah, I bought
back in
some,
the Thanksgiving Mass Day Massacre.
When did I buy some?
I think you did.
Sometime in like November, December. I don't remember.
I thought
exactly
it was
when.
The same time I did Thanksgiving.
It was
Day
a little
Massacre.
Bit.
I bought 17,000.
Yeah, I think it was like early December, mid December. I don't remember exactly. But yeah.
So okay, let's move on. We talked Lily. Let's talk Twitter because Twitter is getting spanked here this morning. They have officially canceled and kicked Donald Trump off Twitter. And all of his followers are selling the stock. down. This is down pretty good. I mean,
it's a very interesting trade this morning because Facebook is down too, right? Because Facebook also took steps to ban Trump, but Snapchat did the same thing, and they're not trading down. And Amazon is not hosting Parler, and I mean, it's obviously it's a much more diversified business, so I don't think Amazon would trade off that one headline. But if Twitter and Facebook are going to trade down, you would think Snapchat would trade down too for doing the exact same thing. I don't know. It's an interesting reaction. Probably an overreaction, right? You would assume?
I think so. Here's my thoughts is that I'm not on Snapchat. I don't go on Facebook much, but I feel like Twitter was Trump's like place to talk. Like Twitter, it's his tweets. We were never talking about, Twitter said on Snapchat or Twitter said on Facebook. Trump said on Facebook. Trump said on Twitter everything he wanted to say.
Right.
And there is a lot of people who are just on Twitter just to honestly, like, the people are like following Donald Trump and they're like, if, you know, my president's going to talk on Twitter, I'm going to talk on Twitter. Like, you got to think about this still, too. There's still a lot of Trump supporters out there. We saw a lot of them, obviously, last week. But, I mean, there's still a lot of Trump supporters out there. And they're seeing this as, Trump was, a big reason to be on Twitter. He was for a lot of people. Now, not for us, stock traders. But for a lot of people, he was the reason. So do they lose users because of this? The market is saying yes. They lose a significant amount of users. I think it's a dip to buy. I would say maybe wait a day and see how it fizzles out. I don't know if it's just going to snap right back, but it might. I mean, I sold this stock. I sold it bad. I kind of want to be back in. So this is one this is a dip I kind of do want to buy. I'd love it at 45. There's some support there. I don't know if it gets that low. How low have we been in pre-market, Joel?
We're trading right near the lows of the pre-market session. Just after that 4 a.m. open, you got to 47.15. So you're still, looks like, still have some work to go on the downside. Your big move day, I'm not sure if that was earnings or that's when Pin Interest had a good report. But there's a daily low at 46.54. A couple areas right there. 46.50. Let's call it 46 to 46.50. You got to give yourself a little more room than just picking out one number. So we'll see if it gets down there today.
The one thing I'll say that has always concerned me about Twitter and Facebook specifically is we have very little clarity as to how many of their active users are actually real people, right? Like, so they obviously report monthly active users, daily active users every quarter. And in Facebook's case, it was going up every time. And in Twitter's case, it wasn't. But we know there are a lot of bots on those platforms. But we have no idea how many, right? We just have very little insight as to how many of the active users are actually real people. I'm sure they know, but we don't know. Like, the public doesn't know. And this is the developments of this past weekend are not going to help us answer that question. But that's one thing that has always sort of annoyed me about both platforms is we really don't know how many of their monthly active users are real people. So,
I lost about 100 followers over the weekend. There was like they were basically, there was a lot of followers. A lot of people said they lost a lot of followers.
Are those real people?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there were some people that were complaining they lost, like, some big people that had, 80,000 followers lost like 10,000 followers. I lost about 100. I noticed it. Not
really?
12.3. Yeah, I lost about 100. But there was like some people that lost like 10% of their following over the weekend. So there was some maybe bot, like, maybe they were cutting it back. I'm not sure why that was.
That's what I'm saying is, like, maybe, like, We just have no idea. So all the people saying they lost followers, like you, Dennis, maybe it was just like one person flipping a switch, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think so. I think it was like a bunch of bots that they knocked off.
I mean, yeah.
You know, 100 followers wasn't a big deal. But, I mean, there's some people that were like pretty ticked off about it. Like, I was seeing some complaints about it. I was like, oh, I lost 50,000 followers because somebody had like 700,000 followers and they're down to 650. I mean, I don't know if they just flipped a switch and they were getting rid of a bunch of bots.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened. What does all this mean to the stock, though? I mean, Joel, what are your thoughts? You own Twitter. Would you buy this pullback?
No.
Do you think it's going away? Is this a big issue? Let's take it to the big question. Is Trump being kicked off Twitter a big issue for Twitter?
Today, no. In the short term, no.
Well, today it is. It's down 8%.
Well, no, but there's nothing's going to happen. The business isn't going to change fundamentally today, right? The question really is there going to be any regulatory reactions to this, right? Are there going to be new laws put in place? Because as people are noting in the chat, it wasn't just Facebook and Twitter. It was Apple. It was Amazon. A bunch of the tech platform. They basically got like deplatformed. Trump got like deplatformed over the weekend. Stripe is not processing payments for the Trump campaign site. So, I mean, like, they got deplatformed. That's the real question. Is there going to be any long-term regulatory pushback, regulatory changes that would impact the business? Twitter's business has not been impacted today, in my opinion. So that's the question. Is there going to be any regulatory changes? I don't know. Like we said last week, right? Everybody's mad at tech. It's not just the Republicans now, right? The Democrats are mad at tech too. So tech regulation is going to be on the agenda in the Biden administration. So it's a very real concern, not just for Twitter, but for Apple, for Amazon, for Google, for Facebook. I wouldn't turn bearish, but I don't know if I'm excited either, you know?
I think I'm a buyer of the dip. I think I am. I don't know if I'm at 47.50 though, or I'm going to try to, you know, be cheap and try to get it down to 45. But I sold my stock after the disappointing earnings. I basically sold it right away because I was spooked on it, and it was a mistake. And, you know, obviously, don't sell the dip, sell the rep. So I did that one wrong. I'm getting a chance to get it back. So is, though, the question, I'm still wondering if it's the same business without Donald Trump, because it does ding it. There is a lot of people who look at that just for Trump. So, I mean, that's the question to be answered, but I think I am a buy the dip. I haven't thought enough about it yet. I'm kind of on the buy the dip camp, so.
I did something that I tell you guys not to do, and I'm kind of not happy with myself. You know how I said, you know, don't sell stocks, you know, tax gains and stuff. And I didn't. And then I didn't pull the trigger last week to get rid of what I had. And that was very stupid.
On Twitter?
Yeah.
Oh, you were holding on just so you didn't have to pay the tax?
No, I mean, I talked about it with, with
one
of my buddies. No, she's not too
this isn't her stock. You're allowed to do what you want on this stock.
Yeah.
This was a Joel pick.
Yeah, so it was stupid. And it ended set up technically, so I might it may be removed from either of my pages of stocks to look at for the next 6 months.
So you're always holding that.
But bottom line,
I don't know what I'm doing with it. I don't want to look at it. In fact, I don't even want to talk about it anymore.
Bottom line, but
Joel's angry.
Let's talk about Facebook. Or
yeah, I'll just put
that's
a bow on this. You know that Twitter and Facebook are going to be all over the news, not just today, like for the next week or more. Right, so there's going to be a lot of discussion. Hopefully, not a ton on our show because there's not.
I mean, this is such a like this is getting so into politics and you know I just don't think it really has any
long-term bearing.
I mean, they're supported. Where are we trading at? We're trading 261.80 in Facebook. You got a couple lows. I'll give the zone on this one. 255 to 260. I see that one low at 255, another one just in there. So if you're doing some zone trading, monthly looks kind of heavy, kind of got a little bit of a rising wedge or just a nice triangle there. If you draw the trend lines, don't feel like doing it off the monthly highs and off the monthly lows. So these stocks are, they got some work to do. I don't know if the old time highs are in for good, but they're gonna, like you said, Dennis, they're gonna be in the news a lot.
Something to be mindful of in a retail driven market is things that are in the news can move. And so
it's all about retail. What are they doing? I mean, let's take Sarepta Therapeutics here, SRPT. Why do you think it's up today? It's up 6%. Why? Like, if you didn't, like, okay, oh, it's a nice bounce back. It's by the dip. No, you know why it's up? Kathy Wood bought the
stock.
That's not retail. That's Kathy Wood.
It is. No, that's not right. Kathy Wood bought it. She could be buying again today, but she bought it on Friday. It was going down on Friday. It is up today because of all the retail lemmings that just chase Kathy Wood. Everybody, you know what? It works. I was the same way. I picked up some on that. You know, I was doing the same thing. I was like, oh, Kathy's buying it. I'm buying it too. And I've already sold into it because I thought it was overdone. But, you know, maybe it's not. Sometimes you get follow through on these moves. I mean, they are just hungry for anything Kathy touches. They are just like sitting there. The bots are sitting there. Everybody, what's Kathy going to buy? What's Kathy going to buy? Let's go. Let's buy it. I mean, it's crazy how hot she is and the retail's all over, and retail's driving price.
That was
6% here today because Kathy Wood bought some stock.
Exactly. And yesterday was Friday was a statistical anomaly in the stock. You know, of course it was bad news. We've seen this thing happen before. But did you see the way this thing, you never got to the pre-market low and it just flatlined? I mean, it was just, I looked at the 15-minute chart late in the day. It was, you could tell someone was just in there saying, okay, I'm not lifting offers.
How many shares did it trade on Friday?
It's a great call by her.
We don't know that. No, I'm not going to say that at all.
Well, right now.
Well, because anything she buys, Joel, she instantly gets 5% on it. Every single stock, if you're, we've been talking about this trade for like the last month. Anything she touches goes up 5%, so it doesn't matter what she picks. We don't know if it's a good call or not yet, because this is the Kathy Wood pop. This is like the Warren Buffett pop, when they disclose that they bought something. So that's the advantage of being, you know, as hot as she is right now, is that she just buys a stock. She's instantly up 5% in it because it's getting disclosed, and she does it in a unique way and discloses it that day. So a lot of times you don't see it for a few days, and sometimes in some of these hedge fund manager cases, you don't see it for 45 days. She does it in a unique way, and you see it right away. So, I mean, she's making money instantly on any stock she picks. And, you know, this was a smart one to pick because there's a lot of people who wanted to buy the dip on this. She shows you, okay, here, boom, I bought, what'd you buy, like 800,000 shares?
Yeah, but do we know if she trades any options at all?
I don't see that. So I think
I don't know if they disclose that because, and I'm just giving a theoretical, you know, scenario.
I think they
here.
Disclose it all.
They disclose it all, so
I
she doesn't
so.
Trade options.
I don't think so because she's buying holdings for the fund, and they disclose
for the fund.
They disclose
okay.
what's in the fund.
If
you don't follow Eric Balchunas on Twitter, you really should. He's an ETF analyst at Bloomberg. He tweets incredible stats about ETF. Flows.
Thanks, Kenny. She said just in stock.
All the time. And he tweeted on this morning that the ARK and Bill Big D, I just saw this stat as well. The ARK family of funds took in $1.2 billion of inflows on Friday alone.
That's why she's just buying everything.
$1.2 billion of new money went into the five or six ARK ETFs in one day.
It's insane. Yeah. How much of this, you know, you just start analyzing it here, and how much of this, you know, like all these stocks, is just Kathy Wood's, you know, the whole reason they're going up is Kathy Wood. I mean, BLI, which she's bought a few times, and obviously, you know, it had the ugly candle, so I guess maybe they aren't sustainable, but I mean, I'm telling you, they get 5-10% pops on her. That Skills, SKL Zebra. And it's hard. I mean, you know, I think, oh, yeah, I'm going to make money and just chase her. But if you're coming in here buying Sarepta this morning, you're paying up 6% more than Kathy did. So are you giving up a lot of the edge? You're giving up a lot of the edge for sure. But there's no way, you know, to know if there's going to be more follow through. Is she buying more tomorrow? You know,
right.
you don't
That's
know.
That's the thing
things.
Is you don't know if she's done buying.
When she's done buying, you see sell-offs in these stocks. They're like, oh, she's done, and then they want to sell them right away. I mean, some of these moves aren't that sustainable. So you can say, oh, yeah, she's going to buy some more. I'm going to buy some of that. And then she doesn't buy it. They hit the stock because Kathy Wood didn't buy more. I mean, that's how much influence she has right now. So it's a whole, you know, trading around Kathy Wood. But, I mean, it's on, you know, she's the hottest thing in the market. Tesla made the call. We know why she, you know, is hot. And, obviously, you know, she's made some really good stock picks. It's been a growth market, and she's all growth, so she's in the perfect spot. Now, I don't know when that, if it changes back to value, she's going to start to probably underperform. But I don't know if it's ever going back. When the hell is the last time value has been in favor for, you know, we're going back a long time.
15
value's
years?
Been in favor.
15 years?
It's been a tough value. I know I'm kind of a value investor, and it sucks. You know, you got to just kind of forget about what the PE is and just buy the growth in the story, and that's what works. And, you know, I've been doing that more in the last couple of years and probably doing better in my long-term portfolio because of it. Again, my trading hat versus my investing hat. I've always kind of invested that I don't want to get just silly, you know, and just pay anything for companies. But I'm telling you, the money has been made just getting silly and paying anything for companies. I don't know when, you know, that doesn't work anymore, but that's what's been working. Growth at any cost. I always wanted growth at a reasonable cost. Growth at any cost has been making more money in the last year.
Does anybody coin that?
Growth at any cost?
Yeah.
I don't know. Growth at GAC. Any, so it'd be GAC. GAC.
And then when you get out, it's yak.
All right, we're making stuff. So this will show up on CNBC in an hour, so as they watch our show.
That was good, Joel.
GAC and yak. We're taking GAC, growth at any cost.
I like YAC. YAC is the inverse of GAC, no doubt. All right, 8:32. We're going to have Tim Quast on in a couple of minutes. Let's just talk NIO here for a second. They had NIO Day over the weekend. So they announced a new car, as they said they would. The ET7 comes with autonomous driving, longer battery range. They talked about new incentives, new power stations, new battery packs, the whole nine yards. And what's NIO doing this morning?
Oh, it's up 11%. I said on Kenny's show, I was on Thursday night with Kenny Glick on Hit the Bed, and we talked a bunch of stock charts. I was on with JC, too, and I said, I like the NCLH as and I'm just going to recap in a little bit with what we said with Kenny. I was like, I like the NCLH. I've gotten in the launch portfolio as a reopening play. And JC comes on and says, this is what we call an SHIT burger. I'm like, well, I'm not saying I like it technically. I'm saying I just like it as a reopening play. But anyways, we were both in agreement on NIO, all three of us. All three of us were in agreement on NIO. This was last Thursday when the stock was $53, and we're like, we all liked the chart. It all looked like it was ready to go. How much NIO did I buy? None. But I should have, because I said on Kenny's show, I said, I think it could go to $100. I'll say it again. I think it could go to $100. I'd be a buyer of pullbacks on NIO. I'm not in it. Wish I was. But, you know, I talk a stock and then I forget about it. And I come back to it and think, why did
it was hard because it had that big run into it, you know? The big anticipation, you know.
A little bit into the NIO
Friday
day.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard to hold these stocks through the events too, Joel, because, you know, sometimes these events don't turn out the way you want them to turn out. So, I mean, whenever you hold it through an earnings event or a NIO day or like an investor's event, I mean, there's always a risk that they say something that the market doesn't like. So you do have risk. But, I mean, just the technicals on this, those 3-4 highs last week bunching up against each other, you know, coming back, it looked like it wanted to break out, and here it is. You know, you get the breakout on Friday. You get the follow-through from the NIO day here today. I mean, this is just, you know, technical analysis 101 breakout trade.
You're bunching up right near the highs of the session at 60. I don't know why someone sold it down to 63 when you can – sell it at 65. I mean, there's a little interest here, just under 66. I don't know if they'll be there during the regular session, but the last since 8 o'clock, since we started the show, someone's unloaded a little bit at 66. Who knows? You know, if they're done, 120,000 shares have traded.
All right, let me bring on our guest here as I'm trying to do a couple things at once. But Tim Quast, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is the founder and CEO of Market Structure Edge, joining us now for Market Structure Mondays. Let's bring Tim on here. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, guys. I'll tell you, it's tough to follow GAC and YAC. That's a...
Yeah.
That's
like
going to be hard to match.
Yeah, get us the quantitative stuff on this. The GAC.
Those could catch on.
The growth at any cost. I was always a GARP guy, growth at a reasonable price. But
right.
I'm telling you, man, it's been growth at any cost this market, and that's what's been making money is the GAC. And Joel's predicting the YAC soon, I guess.
It's when what's making money is GAC, that says a lot.
It is. This is the market. That is GAC is making the money. So is that changed today all of a sudden? Does everything change here today? I mean, we have been overbought. we have been overbought on a lot of stocks. And I got spooked on Friday, and I tweeted out I sold like 8 of my long swing trades because I was like, some of these stocks have went up like 100% in 3 weeks. I'm like, it's time to like maybe ring the register and lock in a little bit of the gains of some partial positions. On some stocks, I sold the whole thing. I mean, what are the numbers saying? What are you saying here, Tim?
Well, again, it always comes back to how you value the market, right? What's your mechanism or lens through which you look at things? Certainly, if you're looking at it fundamentally, you have to keep moving the bar, keep moving the goalposts, kind of like with the pandemic. but the the way that we see it, sentiment, and we think of sentiment as supply and demand. In fact, I want to show you NEO. Since you were talking about NEO, I'll show you, and then we'll come back to a couple of things that we can cover very quickly. But to us, supply and demand is what determines the direction of the market. And right now, on a 10-point scale of supply and demand, the market is at 5.7. And a market above 5.0 has a propensity to rise. And it doesn't have to be rational. It simply means that money is willing to pay more for things. And so long as that remains true, it will continue. But it always reminds me of Stein's law. And I mentioned this last week too. I love it because it's funny. That's Herb Stein, father of Ben Stein, from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, who said,
Bueller, Bueller.
Right? anyone, one of my favorite lines.
That's an awesome movie.
And so Herb Stein said, if something cannot last forever, it will stop. And it will stop at some point. We know that that's the case. So why not? Let me show you, if I can, let me just show you NEO since we can do this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see here. And then we'll come back to the big picture. So I think it will dovetail well with some of your comments, Dennis. But
okay. So
I'm going to look at this EV. I've got an electric vehicles portfolio here at Edge. This is Market Structure Edge, by the way, marketstructureedge.com. So if we go look at NEO, the thing that you will see is that NEO is a 9 out of 10, but the trend remains up and it's less than 50% short. The key behavior driving this stock up is machines. Well, that's okay. It tells you, though, that you're probably getting near the end. But if we look at the data visualizations here, here is sentiment in green, light green, and there's the price in the darker color. So long as it's above 5, it will have a propensity to rise. Here's the entry point at 1 with short volume right at trend, then short volume dipped sharply below trend. That tends to be good for price. And even though it hit 10, this tells us this stock continue to rise, at least for a period of time. So long as it's above 5, there is more demand than supply, and it doesn't matter what the headlines are, doesn't matter what the news is, doesn't matter who's buying or selling it, it will have a propensity to rise. But at some point, it will stop, right? And we'll know when it reverts below 5.
So give us back to those numbers again where you said NEO is a 9 and when you get to these higher levels, you said it's probably, you know, getting towards the end of it. Tell us again about these numbers because some people are just tuning in to see you for the first time here. Tell us again about these numbers and market structure.
So Market Structure Edge is predicated on the idea that there are behaviors that have different purposes and horizons behind price and volume. And there are rules that govern how those prices and behaviors will affect the market. And we think of that rule as regulation national market system, right? So Reg-NMS, big regulatory framework for how stocks trade. And it dovetails into ETFs, which I want to talk about briefly this morning because it's an important part of market structure. So we say that traders today, since 90% of the activity in the market, believe it or not, more than 90% is something other than rational thought, that your best opportunity to make money in the stock market is to understand that it's a great environment for what I would describe as medium frequency trading. The market has a propensity to wax and wane, and all stocks do it, all sectors do it, the market does it. And if you can capture the opportunities where demand is greater than supply and avoid the conditions when when supply is greater than demand, you can do better in the market that we've got. Do I like the market? Probably not more than you do, Dennis, but we make the most of it, right? If we were in charge, it might function differently than it does, but given what we've got, we're going to make the most of it. And that's what Market Structure Edge is about. I appreciate that.
Tim, I want to ask you a question. So we just had this conversation before you came on about Kathy Wood and the massive flows into her family of funds.
Right.
Within that context, can you just talk about how like fund flows can just mess with the market?
As the Louis Navalier, I've just dated myself, as Louis Navalier would say, that's a great question.
I don't know who that is.
So ARC has been the great ETF phenomenon, ETF standing for Exchange Traded Fund. And it's very important to understand how ETFs work. They're very complicated. You know, we did 3 years of research to understand the mechanisms in ETFs. And I'll make this very simple. Take those 3 years, boil it down to about 2 minutes. You have to understand, investors and traders, that there is a wholesale market for ETFs and a retail market. That is a product of exemptive orders from the SEC that permit ETFs to function differently than pooled investments under the Investment Company Act of 1940. So ETFs are created wholesale. A party like Morgan Stanley will create them 100,000 shares at a time, off market, in a block, commission-free, tax-free. And how this happens is Morgan Stanley will gather up stocks, a basket of stocks. It could be cash. It could be a cash substitute, cash in lieu, it's called. And it will be worth a certain amount, let's say $10 million. And they will give that to ARC. And ARC will say, now you can create $10 million of ETF shares to sell to the public. And Morgan Stanley will want to mark it up just a little bit. And ARC wants to earn a fee. They want to create ETF shares. By the way, in November, $90 billion of new ETF shares were created. So far this year, $5.2 trillion of ETF shares have been created and redeemed. And every time that occurs, there's an arbitrage trade. So you and I as investors buy a slip of paper, effectively. It could be my pen. I could tell you my pen is worth whatever is in my wallet. And so long as you believe that, my pen is traded as if it had equal value to what's in my wallet. My wallet could be empty. It could be full of cash. That's the way ETFs work. ETFs are a substitute for underlying stocks. ARC is managing a portfolio that belongs to ARC. It does not belong to you. You cannot go to ARC and trade your ETF shares and get the underlying basket of stocks. You would if you own a mutual fund. A mutual fund is required by law as a pooled investment to be redeemable. And all ETFs are exempted from that provision. Now, that doesn't mean the market is full of danger, but it's very important to understand that ETFs are derivatives. They're substitutes that trade in place of stocks. That's why they're very elastic. So we are valuing ARC shares as though it reflected a massive investment in Tesla, which it does, but the paper doesn't. That's an important principle to understand. The second piece of the puzzle is then where do they get their prices? If they have no intrinsic value, how is an ETF priced? It's priced on perception and whether an ETF is above the value of the underlying basket or below it. And that mechanism encourages people to arbitrage the difference. And that works really well so long as everything is normal. That's the essence of ETFs.
Right. And just to clarify, what you said is not necessarily a bad thing. That's why,
right.
That's why ETFs are so tax efficient. But
right.
Can you
right,
see,
right, right.
Do you see sometimes the process go the other way where demand for an ETF sort of it works in reverse and it creates demand for the underlying shares?
Of course, it's very much like a currency. I think the best way to understand ETFs is to think of them as currencies. So if a currency increases in supply and the perception is that currency is valuable, pen and wallet, remember, then the presence of ETFs, this massive amount of currency, can pull all prices up. It's very much like the U.S. dollar. When the Federal Reserve's balance sheet went from $3.8 trillion before the pandemic to $7.4 trillion currently, the presence of that extra money to offset the decline in output caused what? Well, all asset prices that are risk-based to rise. And the same thing can happen with ETFs. So the great question is, what causes that to stop working? Right? It's the greatest question of all. And the simplest answer is when perception fails. If you stop believing my pen is of the same value as whatever is in my wallet, we're in trouble. And the same thing will be true in the stock market. It happened twice. May 6, 2010, almost 78% of all volatility halted instruments were ETFs because they diverged 30% from the underlying basket. Yeah. And it happened in August 24, 2015. Now, we've put some safeguards in there to improve it. I'm not saying this guy. I think the problem will be when the spreads go away. And they really narrowed last week, by the way. We've had these catastrophic spreads that I think really encouraged an arbitrage trade. And last week, they narrowed way down. So it'll be very interesting to see if the profit opportunity is there. Is a trader willing to trade a 3-basis-point trade versus a 30-basis-point trade? Well, it's not nearly as appealing. And keep in mind, most people don't realize the average component of the S&P 500 moves 310 basis points every day. There's a lot of volatility, and you know, volatility is key to options too.
Tim, before we let you go, I got a little useless trivia question, but yeah. I don't want you to. I think you're going to know the answer, so you're not included.
No, so he's not including you, Tim.
You can't be in this one, okay?
Okay.
Do I get to answer?
You get to answer. Everyone in the chat gets to answer.
Not Tim.
It's a two-part question.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, boy. It's going to take the rest of the show.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. Two-part. I'll forget the first. You know, at my age, I will forget the first part before you
I have a goldfish memory, too, Tim, here. 6 seconds. If you don't get that first part out in six seconds, I'm
Joel,
screwed.
What do you got?
I flushed the cash because there's not enough of it to absorb any more information.
Joel, what do you got?
Who is Herb Stein's son?
Oh, man.
Herbstein's son.
Oh, come on.
Oh, man. The chat, I'm sure, if they're looking
at
this.
Is he famous?
Very.
Very famous son. Huh.
So you go Ben to Herb to...
Wait, no. Herb to Ben. Didn't we just go over this?
No. The other way.
It was subtly in there. You're right, Spencer. It was
okay,
there.
That's the first part.
Didn't we just talk about this 10 minutes ago?
All right, what TV show was he famous for? And what character did he play?
He was in Ferris Bueller. That's not a show. Well, it was a show, but after the movie, right?
It was a show afterwards.
He was in a couple shows.
I don't know.
All right.
He was the science teacher in The Wonder Years.
There you go. Well done, sir. Wow. Yes.
I did not know that.
That's the right. anyone would show up again there.
That's what you get.
You did say Ben. You stuck it in. I didn't know if people will catch
it. You fell asleep again, Joel. You got to take your meds.
All right. Tim Kwas, as I mentioned, he's the founder and CEO of Market Structure Edge. Market Structure Edge is the first decision support platform for traders built on Market Structure. I'll pull up the link there. Try the new way to trade for free. MarketStructureEdge.com. Tim Kwas, always a pleasure, sir.
Great stuff.
Thanks for the insights. We'll talk to you again.
Good to see you guys. Have a good week.
All right. Stay safe out there.
Love the Market Structure Monday here.
Stay safe and sane. All right. 8:49. Let's do some questions from our chat. Someone asked us about Boeing. We'll pull the chart up. This poor company can't get out of it.
No, they get another plane crash. I mean, it's like, oh, was it the MAX? Everybody's asked the first question. Was not the MAX, correct?
No, it was a much older plane.
Still not good.
No, still, of course, not good. A 737-500 crashed in Indonesia on Saturday, of course. Horrible. Yeah. I think I saw 62 people on board. They've already found a wreckage. Just absolutely terrible. And I don't know what you say about
this. So, again, this is a reopening trade. I know some people were telling me it's not a reopening trade because they got the defense business. They have so much other stuff going on. But it's still, you know, commercial airliners are a huge part of this. Never good when you get a plane crash, obviously, for the stock either. I mean, you have some support in this 200 area. Does it hold the 202? Do the buy the dippers come in here? I mean, we're significantly off the 240 area from where, you know, everybody was jumping on the bandwagon here. It's come back down. This 200 is good support. I don't know. There's just so many unknowns here. And really, the reopening trade has really stalled out. I mean, we've talked about the everything rally. But, you know, I'm not in a lot of these reopening trades, but I'm in a few of them. And you can see NCLH. You can see American Airlines. The stocks have all pulled back significantly. So if you want to get them and you think we're going full reopening, I mean, there is that opportunity here now. It's just not just a smooth sailing as, you know, maybe a lot of people would hope, though. And that's why the stocks just cannot seem to hold a bit.
NCLH looks interesting in where it's at. And this was something I drew up a while ago. So keep an eye on that area right there. Is it trading below it?
Area.
Yeah, we're below that area.
It's just been hung out here too long.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in a range. So 23 to 26, 23 to 26, and it's going to be COVID that's going to take us either way. Like I said, you know, if you start to get spread and you start to get, you know, if you ever got a headline that, you know, the vaccine doesn't work on the mutation, I've said all these stocks are in huge trouble. We don't think that's going to happen because, again, Pfizer said they think it works on the mutation. Moderna said they think it works on the mutation. It better work on the mutated version. If it doesn't, reopening trade will come off hard. So that's the risk. We know COVID is the risk on all these stocks. Are people going to jump back in and want to go on a cruise once they get vaccinated? Some people. The one thing about the vaccination, I'm reading this again and again, is, you know, you just can't, even if you get vaccinated, it's not like business as usual because you can still, from what I'm reading, be a carrier of it. So even though you get vaccinated, it means you're not going to get sick, but, or you have a less likelihood to get sick, but can you still be carrying the disease to make somebody else sick? Those studies are still underway, but they tend to think that it might be the case, that you could still be a carrier. So I guess until everybody gets vaccinated, we know half the world doesn't want to get vaccinated, doesn't seem like.
I want to add one thing on the cruises before you go too far away from that. Thanks to Mitch for pointing this out. Carnival does have a conference call today with analysts at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So there will probably be some headlines coming out of that. And anyone trading Carnival or the cruise line stocks today, be mindful. 10 a.m. Eastern, conference call with analysts and the executive team. So I imagine we'll see a couple headlines at a Carnival today.
Yeah, just look at this Boeing. I know someone asked about it last week. I don't know if it was in the afternoon show or not. And it just looked kind of tough. You know, it had a nice run up, and then you had a lot of red candles. Step down sellers at 220. Dennis mentioned that 200 area. That fills a gap. There's even a gap below that between like 160 and 172. But, you know, you like this could be a headline for you too. I mean, if it comes out, you know, total pilot error, you know, then it'll rip. If it, you know, comes out. I'm surprised it's not down. When I heard the news, I thought it would be down a lot more. But that's where it is, trading at the lows of the pre-market session at 201.65.
Right. Much older plane. I mean, too soon to say for sure, but, I mean, Boeing, you know, they have a lot of planes out there. The vast majority don't crash. Obviously, flying is still very safe.
Yeah.
But
but
this is sort of the cost of owning the shares, right? Of the cost of owning Boeing is the headline risk for this sort of thing happening. It's happened a number of times over the past couple of years. So
it's headline risk in everything. It's COVID headline risk. This is headline risk stock 101.
Yep.
Boeing is headline risk stock 101. It's all headline driven. I trade headlines. This is a headline stock. Don't kid yourself. So, you know, you can trade anything technically. Technicals work great in the absence of headlines. Headlines will make any chart do whatever the hell it wants to do. You know, like stock goes bankrupt, stock goes, well, not maybe
not always,
20, but
not
you know,
always.
In a lot of cases, it's going down. I mean, you know, yes, the technicals can sometimes lead. Yes, the technicals, you know, we look at technicals to think where a stock is going to go afterwards, but to dictate direction of a move. That's why most of your technical analysts don't like to hold through an earnings event, because sometimes the earnings events can tend to tie if you've had a run up into the earnings while there's a lot of expectations braced in. So you still want to use technicals. But if you have out of the blue headlines, stocks can do wicked things irrespective of how the technicals look. I don't know if that's a word. Okay.
I think it is. I see a few people a few people talking about Salesforce here. They caught a downgrade this morning from Piper Sandler to neutral. They lowered the price target from 278 to 242. Downgraded just from overweight to neutral.
There's a lot of dogs.
Just been hanging out.
Not going up. Not going up. I bought a small piece at like 222 on dip day when it had the big dip. I was like, I'll take a half-size position. We know when I take a half-size position, I'm not fully convicted, and I'm often wrong. I just kind of wanted to buy the dip. I don't know. The stock just doesn't want to. It's not performing. It's tried to rally a couple of times and just keeps petering out. So it looks like it wants to go lower. The stock looks like it wants to go lower. Completely talking against my book here. 215 is a line in the sand. It has to hold that. If it takes out 215, it's gonna. I think it's going to 200. So we'll see if it can hold 215. I'm not in love with the technicals whatsoever on the stock.
I think this is pretty easy. The street has spoken. They don't like the Slack deal.
That's a great point. I mean, the stock has not recovered from paying that huge, ridiculous premium for Slack.
For a platform that went down a couple of weeks ago.
You're right. And what is Benioff? I mean, okay, so you think about, you know, what has Salesforce done for me lately? You know, and they bought Slack, and they took her, you know, and they paid a huge premium for a stock, you know, trading 24, and they paid 42 for it. I mean, and it was big bucks. So you're exactly right, Joel. And maybe it's going to take a little bit of while before they start to see some benefit from that. And the market is pricing that in. I think CRM, talking again against my book because I have a small piece, I think it's going 200. It takes out 215. I think there's a trade down to 200 on the short side.
And then you buy the dip.
At 200.
Just to clarify.
Well, okay. Hey, you always buy the dip.
You always buy the dip. All right. What about Alibaba here? More headlines over the weekend about U.S. The U.S. firms NYSE delisting Chinese or Hong Kong listed products that have exposure to specific blacklisted Chinese industries and companies. So that happened last week. Alibaba, as I understand it, is not going to be delisted because they do not have exposure to these sanctioned companies. But it is sort of caught up in this whole U.S.-China regulatory.
It's stuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you could throw darts and try and figure out where this thing's going, but, you know, you made that low on the actual panic day when the regulators stepped in and you tried to rebound and you had short-term profit taking in there. So my 50% is off a little bit on that, but you guys are smart. You guys can do the math. What was the low that day? That low that day was actually, 211, I think so? Yeah, I was off by a lot. 211, and then your rebound high was 43, 32 point move, 16. Yeah, 27 right there. I'm not too, even though my lines are off, that's the chop. There it is. Until the street decides that they're done being regular or whatever's going on.
It's the headline. It's stuck. We're waiting for the headline. We're in waiting. This is a stock in waiting for what is happening with the regulation of Alibaba. What is happening with Jack Ma, maybe, you know, but, you know, maybe the company's separated enough from Jack Ma now. But we know Baba's being looked at for antitrust issues. So what are the regulators going to do over there? We said before, we don't have precedents. They don't regulate like they do over here. So they're regulating a company. We don't know what they're going to do. And the market doesn't know what it's going to do. And it's a huge unknown. Don't kid yourself. The company's fundamentals are good. It doesn't matter if the regulation comes and it hammers it. So that's why you got to sit. And I think you're coming in and buying the dip. It's a coin flip here. Maybe they come in and say, oh, yeah, you know, we're giving them a break here. And Jack Ma is going to, you know, he's going to get back on the good side of regulators here. But if that doesn't happen, the stock could get hammered, too. So it's not a low risk trade. It is a headline stock right now waiting for a headline.
Let's just do one more. Did you guys see GameStop this morning? It's been moving. So they announced that the founder of Chewy and a couple of his guys, his CFO and CMO, are joining the board of GameStop. I guess that's bullish. They also said that their holiday sales fell 3.1% year over year. I guess that's bearish. I don't quite know.
I can't understand the rally in this, but again, some of these retailers that were for dead you know, have obviously had significant rallies here. Even Bed Bath and Beyond, you know, it just doesn't want to go down. It's holding that 18 level. 18 is huge on that stock. I've got all these stocks in the same camp. It's retailers that are not firing on all cylinders, but it doesn't seem to matter. They're just buying stocks, you know, on dips, no matter what it is. And it's the dash for trash, too, as well. They're finding reasons. I mean, the technicals look fine on GameStop. The fundamentals is what scares me on GameStop, Bed Bath & Beyond. It scared me on Albrands, even though Albrands just continues to rip, and I guess they've turned this company completely around, which I don't understand whatsoever, but from a fundamental basis. But the technicals aren't lying. GameStop continues to have, you know, headlines that come out and the stock pops on them. So yeah. I'd say innocent until proven guilty on GameStop.
This whole $22 area, very, very important. You couldn't quite get there. You see you had a couple daily highs over 22, and then you failed. Maybe that negative news came out after the positive news. Boy, I mean, this thing moves around pretty good. Just look at these lows here, and I would say no major downside. You have one, two, three lows in a row here. Actually, four out of five lows is called 1720. You're a ways away from that. But until you breach that, a trend is still up in GameStop.
Let's just do one more.
Looking at balances. We haven't looked. And you know, we used to do this every day. And then people, I think, just get bored with it. But, I mean, I'm telling you, where stocks, you know, what's looking weak in the open and what's looking strong. Lots of sell imbalances across the board. I got General Electric with 1.1 million to sell. That's significant. AT&T, 257,000 to sell. That's significant as well for AT&T. Pfizer, 171,000 to sell. Wells Fargo, 135,000 to sell. Sneaky one, MO, 102,000 to sell in MO. That's significant as well. Boeing is your big one. 298,000 to sell in Boeing. It's indicating a $200 open here right now. So, you know, continued pressure here. 200 is huge for Boeing here this morning.
Yeah. All right. 9:02. That's a good place, I think, for us to wrap up. So thanks to our guest today, Tim Quast. We appreciate all the comments from him, all the comments in our chats. There's our YouTube chat. There's people on Facebook. There's people on Benzinga.com, people on Benzinga Pro. We appreciate all of that interaction and more. Want to remind you all for the final time today that today's show is sponsored by Market Structure Edge. It's the first decision support platform for traders built on Market Structure. To learn more, go to marketstructureedge.com. For everyone listening via podcast, please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Hit that like button as well. That helps us a lot. We appreciate all the likes, because that means YouTube will put our video in more places on the site and more people will be able to find us. And that is always great. So that's a wrap. Everyone have a good rest of your day. Stay safe. Good luck in your trading. We'll be back at 3:40 p.m. Eastern time. And have a good day.